Hello, my name's Abraham.
And I'm Shia.
And we're the head students of Dover Court.
And today we'll be interviewing one of the MIT students from the MIT campus who's here teaching at Dover Court.
Hello.
Hi.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Maya. I am a senior at MIT. I'm in my last year. I'm studying physics. I have an interest particularly in astrophysics. I like black holes. I'm applying to grad school right now, and so I'm hoping to continue on my education and maybe one day become a professor.
So what are your first impressions of Singapore, and how does the environment differ to America?
Oh, it differs in so many ways, but also America is a very diverse place. You know, there's lots of different regions. First, the humidity is really getting to me here, the heat. I came from the western side of the United States, where I call home, where there's a lot of snow right now. So I was, you know, I had to leave home all of my long pants and sweaters and things like that and come here and just put on shorts and t-shirts. But also the food is amazing. I'm really obsessed with the food. There's so much greenery everywhere. I love the gardens. I went to the Botanic Gardens on my first day. They're incredible. It seems like you can do something new every single day. Just walk around and you can look at all these new things and it's amazing. I love it.
So what is your first impression of Dover Court, and is it similar or different to other schools you've attended to? You also mentioned yesterday when we attended the MIT assembly, and you were saying how you did project learning for your school, so how was that like?
Yeah, so this school does remind me a little bit of my project-based learning high school that I went to. It was a public school, but it was kind of a magnet school, we call it, so you could choose to go there instead of the traditional American high school. And so in that environment, you know, we attend classes where we learn certain topics, but then we get to expand on our learning by taking on projects. So some of the times that's, you know, you create a documentary type video about something, or you work on like a museum exhibit. So in that way, I think Dover Court reminds me of that, just like the environment, how you interact with your teachers. I think it reminds me a lot of my high school. But you guys have so many resources here that I'm pretty jealous of, and I think it's a pretty cool place. And I like the open campus, kind of. You can walk around these different buildings. You know, there's, you know, the way that you have everything structured, and it's just so different across the whole campus, I think is really neat.
What have you enjoyed most about teaching classes at Dover?
What have I enjoyed most? I've been working a bit with the younger kids, some year two and year three students, and they're just so excited. It's so cool. I gave a couple astronomy presentations to the year three groups where we talked about how many stars are in the galaxy. We talked about how many alien civilizations we think maybe exist in the galaxy. And then I also talked about my interest in black holes. And I got so many questions on black holes. I still have kids coming up to me every day being like, can I ask you another question about a black hole? And they're so cute.
So now questions that are kind of regarding more of getting into MIT mm-hmm. and universities in general. So what was the process of applying to MIT and being accepted?
Yeah, so when I was applying to universities, you know, I was kind of interested in getting out of the state that I lived in, Idaho. So I applied to kind of all of the top big name schools without very much knowledge of what it was really going to take to get in. So I was rejected for most of them. But I did happen to get waitlisted at MIT. And I think it's probably because I have like a strong passion for other things outside of school. So I mentioned yesterday that I was really into dance. So I did like 12 years of ballet. I eventually decided to stop doing ballet, but then I transitioned into doing other things related to dance. So I worked on some musical productions. I helped with choreography. I also started doing like theater tech stuff at my school. So I think a big part of what makes you stand out as an applicant at somewhere like MIT is just showing that you have a passion and that you're interested in exploring all the different avenues of that passion and working towards it on your own rather than just like waiting for things to come to you. But then the actual process of applying, you know, you need to get good grades because places like MIT, they are hard. You know, you're going to be academically challenged, so they want to make sure that you're prepared for that. But they also want to make sure you're a well-rounded student. And luckily, MIT's campus is pretty big. You know, there's a lot of diversity on campus. You can always find kind of your group of friends, your group of people that you like to do things with. And then, of course, there's the essays also in the application. You want to really make sure your essays stand out. My advice is to be funny. Like, I think that's what really makes them stand out. These admissions officers are reading so many applications. You know, if you want to make sure you stand out, you want to try to make them laugh. So that's my advice.
Sorry, it's all right. So what subjects did you take in high school?
What subjects? Oh, that's a good question. So in America, we have these advanced placement classes. They're like college courses, but for high schoolers. And so you take them through the whole year, you study, and then you take an exam at the end. So my school offered a few of those in the sciences. So I was particularly interested in the advanced placement physics class. There's there's a couple different levels of physics. My school only offered the first one. There's also advanced placement chemistry. So those are a couple popular classes that I took. And then there's some other ones that I was interested in, like, or there was AP calculus, so math courses. So I was definitely more focused on STEM, but there's also, my school offered a lot of different electives. So, you know, I could take things like photography and one particular class was called human geography, and you learn about like why civilizations exist where they are and how their communities developed. And so there was some room for us to explore, but I was definitely interested more in the sciences. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about being into like dance and theater. Do you have any favorite musicals? Because you've got a lot of drama students at this school.
Yeah, I'm actually working with the dance CCA instructor right now, and I've been helping them practice a little bit. I haven't started with their musical production of Peter Pan yet, but I've been doing something with that. Favorite musical, that's a hard one. There's so many good ones. I'm a big fan of Mamma Mia. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that movie. But stage musicals, I saw the Mean Girls musical on Broadway, the one that just came out as a movie. That was pretty good. I don't know, I haven't seen the movie yet. I've heard it's maybe not that great, but I thought the musical version on stage was cool. Yeah.
So what is the coolest part of the MIT campus?
Ooh, coolest part. The campus is kind of divided into a west half and an east half, and the west half is mostly dormitories, so that's where most of the students live. There's also, you know, exercise fields, things like that. But the east half is where all of the campus academic buildings are. And underneath all the buildings, there's this really big network of like tunnels, we call them. It's really just basement hallways, but you kind of go into them and you feel like you're lost because you can't see anything. There's very few markers, but you can get almost anywhere on campus using these tunnels that go underground. That's pretty cool. You can get, you know, if it's really cold and snowy outside, you can get from one end of the campus to like almost a mile away just using these tunnels. Yeah.
So what are some fun things you do at campus, but like outside of class?
Yeah, so I'm still very involved in dance. One of my favorite clubs at MIT is called Dance Troupe. It's a club of almost like 200 to 300 people, and it works how we have a set of maybe 14, 15 choreographers every semester who create dances of different styles and different levels. And then we have students from all over campus join these dances, and then we practice them all the semester, and then we have a big showcase at the end. So I'm always a dancer usually in those, so I've done some of the advanced contemporary dances, advanced hip hop, but then I'm also usually a choreographer often for the beginner contemporary groups. So I think that's super fun because you're teaching people who are your same age but are like they've never experienced dance before and they're really excited to try and learn, and it's super fun.
Yes, and I've heard that MIT has like a tough schedule, a lot of lessons and like study time. How do you manage like dance within these hours?
Yeah, so sometimes it does feel like my days are scheduled down to like the last minute, you know, like, okay, I wake up going straight to this lecture, have maybe half an hour break for lunch, go straight to a couple of more classes, and then I go straight home, change, I go to dance for a couple hours, maybe I come home, and then I'm just studying for a long time. So it is pretty rigorous, but you know, there are ways I think that are manageable. So I'm lucky where that, like, many of my assignments are due at the end of the week, which means that, you know, I kind of start them on Monday, finish them on Friday, and then I kind of have the weekend to myself. So it's different. It depends on how you kind of set up your own schedule, because it's customizable. You know, you choose your own classes every semester. You can pick how you want your schedule to be set up. You can take, some people like to take up to 5 or 6 classes. That's not for me. I am a 3 or 4 class kind of person, because I like to have that free time to do like my dance stuff, but also I'm involved, you know, I have a lot of friends, and we like to do things together and go to dinner, things like that. So I think it's manageable. It might feel like, you know, you're scheduling even all of your social activities, but if you're okay with that, I think it works well.
So which is your favorite course or class that you've been taking, and how would you sell it to like a Dover student?
It's a good question. Let's see. A class that I once took was, it's not actually a class that's offered all the time. So selling it to someone might be difficult in case it's not offered if they end up going to MIT. But it was a special subject within the physics department with MIT professor Anna Friebel. She studies ancient stars. And so she's looking at like the oldest stars in the universe with telescopes. And you do that by looking at their chemical makeup. And if they have less metals, we think, then they have a better chance of being born in the very early stages of the universe. So I took this class with her where we were given like a star. We were assigned a star and we were given data from the star and we had to analyze it and try to figure out like how was it formed in the universe. So the star that my partner and I had, we think that it was formed from a supernova of an original star, and then also it combined, I think, with a neutron star, and then it's currently floating kind of in the halo of our Milky Way. So it's out there somewhere, but it's super, super ancient. That was super fun because it was kind of a real world experience of actually doing research in the classroom, and you have this guiding hand, but you also feel like you're actually doing something. Yeah, that was a cool class.
How would you explain like the MIT environment?
The MIT environment. Oh, well, it's so different because there's so many different groups, you know. You do kind of end up running in the same circles, I'd say. So, you know, sometimes I'll enter like some of the dining halls. I usually don't eat at the dining halls because I am a part of an independent living group of all women. And we all kind of live together, we cook together, we eat together. So most of my friends are there, but sometimes I'll go to the dining halls and I just walk in. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's all these people I haven't seen before. Like, I didn't know you went here. Who are you? Because you do kind of end up, I think, running in many of the same circles, but there's just so many different like communities of people on campus. Yeah.
What is the coolest or most proud work that you've produced, and what did it do?
Ooh. So most students on campus at some point in their MIT career end up doing undergraduate research. So you're kind of paired with a professor or faculty member and you help them in their lab and, you know, hopefully you kind of get something out of that. Sometimes, you know, you're just a code monkey and you're, you know, writing code for them. Other times you're actually doing kind of your own research and trying to produce results. So I'm currently working with the MIT LIGO Lab. LIGO stands for Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. And they study black holes. And so they have these super big observatories in the US that are designed to detect gravitational waves. And I'm currently working on a sensor that's going to go into one of these observatories. And when I went into this project, like, I had no idea what it would take to build a sensor. I didn't know anything about electronics. I didn't know anything about kind of like optical systems like lenses. I didn't know how to work with lenses. There's all these kind of things that I had to learn. But I was always really interested in LIGO because it was like, oh, gravitational waves and black holes, that's my field. But then I ended up going into something that was more mechanical engineering related, which was cool because I also have an interest in mechanical engineering, so I got to marry those two interests. But this sensor that I've created, you know, it started from just a really simple idea, and now I have like a physical thing that I can point at and say, like, I made that. And, you know, people in our lab call it Maya's sensor, and I think, wow, I hope that name sticks. Yeah.
And you mentioned how you're applying to grad school now.
Yeah.
And how do you think that would differ to like an undergrad school?
Oh, how's the application process different?
Yes. Also, like how like the environment would change and like.
Oh, right. Yeah. So the application process was very different. I get very stressed out by applications, but I do think that the graduate applications were slightly easier than my undergraduate applications. I had maybe a bit of a terrible time when I applied to my universities. But the graduate applications, I think, are a bit easier because, you know, I don't want to say they care about you less as a person, but, you know, they are focused more on kind of your academic strengths and your research strengths. So, you know, you're not writing essays about, you know, your extracurricular interests. You're writing essays about the research you've done. And those essays can kind of be used again on every application. So in that sense, it's a lot easier. On the other sense, to be like successful in graduate school, you need to have a really, really good advisor and mentor. So that involves researching all of the schools, researching the departments, who the faculty members are, and trying to, like, based on the information you've heard from other people, based on the information on their websites, trying to pick people who you think would be, that have good, interesting research and who would be a good mentor. And that process is pretty difficult. That takes a long time. But luckily, when you get admitted to these programs, usually they invite you to go meet people. So I'm hoping maybe in late February, early March, that I'll get into a few programs and I'll get to go meet them. So I think that's good, because I think usually at an undergrad university, you get out of it what you put into it. So, you know, you can really go anywhere. You can get kind of the same experience that you would at MIT, as long as you kind of build your experience yourself somewhere else. I don't know if that's really as true in grad school, because it's so dependent on the people that you're working with. But I think in undergrad, it's easier to find more people.
When receiving your university applications, and if you got in or not, what advice do you give to people who are going to soon be getting that, and if they don't get accepted into the school they want?
Yeah, that is a very stressful thing to think about, I understand. I just have to say, though, that there's, like, so many qualified people. Like, MIT, we think of it as, like, the top of the top. Only the most academically rigorous people can get in. But it's the actual truth is that so many people could succeed at MIT. Like, just because you didn't get in does not mean that you weren't smart enough. Like, it doesn't mean that at all. It doesn't also mean that you weren't interesting enough, you know? They just have so many applicants from so many qualified people, it really just comes down to a numbers game. So if you don't get in, it doesn't mean anything about you. It just means that they just had to, you know, reach in and grab whatever qualified people they could get first, you know? There's just so many applicants who are all outstanding, including, you know, you guys. So, yeah, it's a hard thing. You know, I faced many rejection letters, and it did definitely put me down a little bit. But you just have to remember, like, yeah, you can really go anywhere. You can get kind of a very good education, a good experience anywhere, as long as you put into it what you want to get out. Yeah. It's stressful, I know. You try to think, like, you know, you have more opportunities in the world. You know, if you want to go to grad school, that's great. You have more opportunities to apply and get in somewhere else. And, you know, maybe you could even end up at one of these great universities and decide you don't like it. You know, I know some people at MIT who kind of wish that they'd gone somewhere else, you know, so nothing's ever perfect. You know, you just hope for the best. Yeah.
And lastly, you said how you were waitlisted for MIT at first.
Yeah,
what does it mean to be, like, waitlisted at a university?
Yeah, okay, so when you're waitlisted, all of MIT's regular decisions come out on March 14th, Pi Day. 3.14. And so on that day, I opened up my response and it told me I was waitlisted. So what that means is that they admitted a certain number of students, but they don't know yet if all of them are going to accept, right? Because some of them are also probably going to decide not to go to MIT, they're gonna go to another university that they're accepted into. So after they find out how many of those people have accepted, maybe they have a few open spots, and so then they'll relook at all the people on their wait list and choose a few people for that spot, for those open spots that weren't filled in the first round. So I was waitlisted at three universities, actually, and I got into two of them, which is actually pretty rare, I think. It's not very common to get off a waitlist because usually, well, they don't have very many spots. I think my year there were maybe 13 open spots. But usually when you get waitlisted, you also get the opportunity to send them kind of a follow-up letter. It can be like another essay. Usually they'll ask, you know, to make sure that you're still interested, first of all, that you want to stay on the waitlist, and then also they want to know if you've done anything cool since you first submitted your application. And when I got waitlisted and wanted to send in this letter, I was really stressed at school at the time, and I happened to be speaking at my graduation. We didn't have a valedictorian, it was just my high school allowed anyone to apply if they wanted to speak at the graduation, so I happened to be speaking with a few of my friends, and I was working on my draft of the speech, and so for my interest letter, I just said, I can't talk right now, I'm really stressed out, but here's some work that I've been working on, and I just submitted that letter. So I think And I think the speech that I wrote, I was trying to be funny at least. So I think I kind of stood out in that way, and that's probably why I got taken off the wait list. But yeah, I would say, you know, if you get put on a wait list, that's great. First of all, that means that like you're as qualified as any of the other people who already got admitted. But then you also have to remember, like, you know, there's a pretty good chance you're not getting off. So just, you know, take a risk, I would say, if you're in that situation. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to allow us to interview you. It's been really great getting to know you and all the work you've done. So enjoy the rest of your time in Singapore.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah.